So you ever look over in traffic and see someone who seems to look like they don't exactly have their mind on the road?
Hey, my name's Jessica, and I'm calling from Providence, Rhode Island. I have a bit of a commute in the morning, and I always daydream in traffic about retiring, sitting on a rocking chair on a wraparound porch at dusk with a good book and a hot cup of tea.
Hey, Jessica, wake up. There's an 18-wheeler in your lane. Daydreamers out there, and we've discovered there are so many of you. One of you from Provo, Utah. I daydream many times throughout the day about traveling the world. Or from Portland, Oregon. I daydream all the time. I love it. It's how I get my best creative ideas in school. I got in trouble for not focusing, but now as an adult, I can daydream all day. But across town there in Portlandia, one of you says, I have not daydreamt since I was much younger. I do meditate when I'm not pressed for time or when I have trouble sleeping. Why is that? Kids getting in trouble for daydreaming? People having time to fit it into their busy lifestyles? Do kids even have time for anything like pointless internal contemplation? And how valuable is the small D for daydreaming in the development of the big B for brain? Joining us, Mary Helen Immordino Yang, professor of psychology and education at the University of Southern California's Brain and Creativity Institute. Welcome.
Hello.
So would you say that daydreaming is a difficult software install for kids in our overprogrammed age right now?
Actually, I think that the brain is naturally inclined toward daydreaming in most people. And what we're finding, actually, is that daydreaming recruits a very central core network of the brain that's essential for all kinds of cognitive and emotional and social skills, things like being able to imagine the future and to learn from your mistakes, things like being able to have memories that are meaningful to you about your past experiences, being able to make moral judgments about social situations, not just about sort of what's happening in the situation, but about what it means for the kind of people that are involved and what the kind of underlying values are. So daydreaming and the brain network that support it turn out to be super important, actually, for child development and also for adult brain health.
So daydreaming is actually a pre-installed software app, and we add apps at our peril and sort of erase the impact of daydreaming by crowding it out. Is that what you're saying?
What we're finding, and this is our lab and also, you know, many other labs for about 10 years now, are finding that the brain, in a very sort of coarse, big level sense, is organized around what you might call two big brain networks that that are recruited for different kinds of processing. One of these networks is this daydreaming network that kind of turns inward and allows you to make meaning and kind of integrate information with memories and with values and with emotional feelings. The other network allows us to pay attention to the world and to look at, you know, that phone dinging in front of you or to watch that, you know, 18-wheeler that's coming over into your lane while you're driving. And so what we know about the brain is that there's this very basic kind of toggling switch where you move almost like a seesaw, like a teeter-totter, inwardly or outwardly, but you can't co-activate those two brain networks very efficiently. They flip off with one another. So what that tells us is that, and anyone who daydreams knows this, when you're daydreaming, you don't have as much attention into the world. When you're being distracted and really paying attention into the world, you don't daydream or think about the deep meaning of things. So what it tells us for child development is that it's quite possible, although this is just a hypothesis at this point, that when we systematically bias children's brain development toward paying attention to things in the world, video games, you know, cell phones dinging, TV on all the time, stuff happening all the time in front of you, as compared to allowing them some time to kind of reflect and be free from external distractions so that you can let that internal mind network kind of try itself out and play things out, we might systematically be biasing children's social brain development towards a kind of more shallow, action-oriented, kind of entertain-me mentality.
All right, so that's the hypothesis being tested by Mary Helen Immordino Yang, professor of psychology and education at the University of Southern California's Brain and Creativity Institute, a laboratory. In a very different laboratory in New Hampshire, Jessica Leahy is also with us, former teacher. You would say that hypothesis is pretty plausible, right, Jessica?
Absolutely. I got interested in this topic because I write about kids learning from their mistakes, rebounding from their mistakes. And in the process of writing about that, I found that the time I spend being idle, doing repetitive tasks like weeding or raking or walking in the woods gave me the time I needed in order to figure out what I wanted to write about. And I couldn't exclude that from my writing process. It was just too important. That time to let things percolate was where I figured out what I was going to write. And I would write entire chapters in my head. So I became interested in, as a teacher, how dependent are my students on that process as well.
Now, do you think that teachers and, you know, being getting in trouble for daydreaming and staring out the window, you know, spring fever, that sort of thing, kids have been getting in trouble for that for generations. Do you think we've increased the fear of daydreaming on the part of educators and parents, Jessica?
Well, I think it's a challenge. I mean, we hear over and over again how little time we have in the school day, and yet at the same time, we need to pack more in. And the teachers, when we see kids, you know, when I'm in charge of study hall, I know if I look around and someone's not paying attention to what they're supposed to be doing, I have a tendency to snap them out of it. But I think after reading Dr. Mordino Yang's research, I'll be a little more reluctant to do that.
Actually, a class in daydreaming. Who knows? It's Jessica Leahy, a former teacher who is writing a book in New Hampshire and has studied this subject in her own work. Mary Helen Mordino Yang, is daydreaming something that can be cultivated specifically? Is inner contemplation something that you can practice, that you can condition for?
The evidence suggests that it is. So in adults, many people find that meditation helps to sort of encourage these networks. But you don't necessarily have to meditate to encourage these networks. The way you do it is it's by its very nature not effortful. So you need to turn down the outside distractions, you know, shut off the social media, and instead spend time with your real, you know, friends and relations in person or just alone. Like Ms. Leahy said, you can go for a walk in the woods or you can weed your garden or whatever it is you enjoy doing and just kind of let your mind wander. How many people have had really great insights in the shower, you know? And this is the kind of thinking that actually is most integrative, most divergent, most creative sometimes. And like she also said, we're sort of systematically undermining this kind of thinking in the way that we design our educational system sometimes.
Well, for both of you, it would be impolite of me to daydream in the middle of this conversation, but thank you so much. We'll send you off into the weekend daydreaming. Jessica Leahy, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Jessica's an English teacher and writer in Wolfsboro, New Hampshire, and Mary Helen Mordino Yang is a professor of psychology at the University of Southern California's Brain and Creativity Institute. Happy daydreaming to you, Mary Helen.
Thank you very much.
We want you to join the conversation. As always, remember, as part of our series, Young Nation Under God, we're hosting a live chat today from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. UNC sociology professor Lisa Pierce and I will be discussing the changing role of religion in American society, especially for the millennial generation. We want your questions, stories, testimonials, like Kate from Riverdale.
I grew up Catholic, ran with the Protestants in high school, and discovered Judaism in college. I converted to Judaism, attempted rabbinical school, but was forced to leave when I came out. I then married an Episcopal priest, and she and I have a wonderful theological life together.
Great story. Ran with the Protestants. Sounds like a rock band. I have all their albums. Tell us your story at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.